It's here and now. You've likely heard of Chile's disappeared, the thousands abducted and killed under Pinochet's dictatorship, or Argentina's disappeared, tens of thousands targeted by that country's military regime in the 70s and 80s. But what about America's disappeared? Law professors Margaret Burnham and Margaret Russell are trying to bring those stories to light. In a New York Times op-ed, they write that hundreds of black Americans were killed in racial violence from 1930 to 1960, but the cases were ignored or mismanaged by a biased justice system. It's been 60 years since one of the most famous of those murders, that of Emmett Till, the 14-year-old who was pulled from his bed in Mississippi, tortured, shot, and thrown in a river. His killers, reportedly punishing him for whistling at a white woman, were let off. Margaret Russell, a law professor at Santa Clara University in California, researched that case and others, and she joins us now. And you say this search by journalists and lawyers has been going on for decades, and a law to remove some roadblocks was passed 8 years ago. It's the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act. So why are you searching and writing about this now?
Well, I think what's different now is that time is really running out. I know we've said for 25 years that time is running out to actually locate witnesses, to collect evidence. Witnesses are dying, memories are fading, and evidence is disappearing. And so over the last number of years since the federal law, the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act passed, the emphasis has been on prosecution. I think now the realization is that fewer and fewer prosecutions can actually be brought because of the passage of time. Right. And so our focus is on additional remedies that really look toward broader community-based, community-generated solutions that help restore a sense of justice and truth-telling.
Well, columnist Charles Blow writes about your work and also how it in some ways laid the basis for distrust of authority in African-American communities that we see today. I mean, there are grandmothers alive who remember grandchildren who were killed and cases not followed through on. And there are trails. You write about a letter that someone sent to FDR in 1941.
Yes, that's right. And that is such a moving letter, actually, to read and hold in your hands, because it's written by a mother, a grieving mother, who is trying to get someone to pay attention to the fact that her son has been murdered by a white man who's been identified and that no one will take the case.
Yeah, what happened?
So there was a response from the Justice Department that basically said that it was not the federal government's jurisdiction or power to do something about this, so that instead it should be referred to the relevant state of Mississippi in order to be investigated. And to our knowledge, the investigation never took place.
Well, so you mentioned the 2008 Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act passed by Congress, authorizing the Justice Department to work with local authorities, as opposed to in Roosevelt's time, you know, when the federal government couldn't do this, to investigate racially motivated crimes committed before 1970. Did that help, the 2008 law?
Yes, it did help. It didn't go far enough. The funding did not get allocated. The members of the Justice Department who were investigating along with the FBI uncovered some 105 files that they opened, 126 victims, and three prosecutions resulting in convictions. However, the law is very prosecution focused. There are additional tools to prosecution that aren't covered by the act. And in the collaboration that exists between local communities and law enforcement, I think we now have an opportunity to explore additional tools, such as truth-telling commissions.
Well, we've spoken about this many times. What do you say to whites in particular who say, you know, this has nothing to do with me. Maybe I'm from the North. We didn't have slaves. Or I'm three generations removed from the Ku Klux Klansmen in the South where I live, who was so filled with hatred. This has nothing to do with me. You know, I would have been so against this had I lived in that time. Why should I be involved in truth-telling commissions or reparations, which you also suggest payments to descendants? What would you say to them?
Well, it's a very complex and ongoing comment, and I don't want to disparage it, but I think we know very well from everyday events, and particularly in the weeks and months since Ferguson, Missouri, that our society is really suffering from very deep racial wounds. And they don't have to do, literally, with anybody who's not involved in Ferguson or in any other city involved. But this is our country, and we have seen communities that have been ravaged over the last couple of generations because of racial hatred that really was not so long ago. Emmett Till's death was in 1955. And I think the poverty, the segregation, the conflicts between police authorities and communities, and the distrust and lack of awareness and even friendship among races in our nation is really a sign that we need to look at this more broadly and systemically.
Emmett Till's death was horrific. He was tortured, shot, his face destroyed, and his mother insisted on an open casket for the world to see what had happened to her son. Just tick off and I don't mean that to diminish them, but just a couple of the stories that you came across that I'm sure we have not heard of others who weren't found. Emmett Till shouldn't have been found. His body was, you know, thrown into a river with a weight on it. What other stories have you dug up?
There's some amazing stories. So we already had mentioned the letter from the mother who wrote to FDR because her son was dragged out of a river dead. During this period that we're studying, murdering blacks and throwing them in the river was a pretty common theme. So much so that at the period of time, if people remember in the early 60s when the civil rights workers, Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, went down south to Mississippi, disappeared, and then were found after days of dredging the rivers and looking through the dams, an interesting case arose of people who were looking for these known, very high-profile civil rights workers who were getting attention around the world actually ran across several other bodies and first thought that those were the workers and then discovered, oh, no, these are two other young black men who were, Mr. D and Moore, who were killed by the Klan. Other cases that have arisen in our research involve lynchings of 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, a rape by a group of Klan members of an older black woman. They're horrific. And even though Emmett Till's image is the one that really stunned the nation and is very much in our memory, in some ways he's just standing in. He's sort of taking the honorable place of so many other dead whose faces we don't see and whose stories we don't yet know.
We know that Bryan Stevenson, the civil rights lawyer, has a project to try to note the site of every lynching in America with a marker. Do you have anything like that? You've mentioned wanting to have maybe truth commissions or people at least be able to gather and talk about some of these stories that disappeared. But are you hoping to mark it in any way?
Yes. Yeah. So as I said, 14-year-olds, teenagers were lynched. And for two teenagers, Ernest Green and Charles Lang in Mississippi, they were lynched in 1942 at a place that afterwards was long called the Hanging Bridge. It may still be called the Hanging Bridge. But that site is now the place for commemorative gatherings, remembering them. Hmm. Another example comes from Live Oak, Florida. Another teenager, a 15-year-old, Willie James Howard, who was tossed into the Suwannee River in 1944. And now that is a marker. It's a site for community members to come together, not just to remember him and his life lost, but what it was like in that community and to really honor the suffering of the people there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add to that the commissions that we mentioned in our op-ed in the New York Times operated to create historical records of some very significant race riots in which thriving African-American towns were essentially leveled. One was in 1898 in Wilmington, North Carolina, race riot, and there was much more recently in the last couple of decades a commission that issued a report and recommendations. In the 1923 Rosewood, Florida massacre, the Florida Massacre report actually resulted in legislation in Florida that provided reparative payments.
What does it do? It would obviously be balm for the descendants and the African American community. What does it do for everyone to do this?
I think on an individual, just person to person, not mentioning racial differences, level of understanding, it's easy to see that this is a kind of justice, a kind of restorative justice that is like a balm, that is a healing balm. We think that it's a way to bring transformational change, not only to those communities, but the way that we actually honor our dead. Blacks and those who fought for the civil rights of blacks gave up their lives, and they should be honored and remembered because they're part of the fabric of the history of this country. And as we see today, we are very much continuing in the vein of that kind of pain.
That's Margaret Russell of Santa Clara University School of Law. She's with the University Center for Social Justice and Public Service. We'll link you to some of her writing with Margaret Burnham about the cold cases of the Jim Crow era and their project. Margaret, thank you.
Thank you.
And so links will be there if you want to contact her, maybe about your family's story. You're listening to Here and Now.